You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
It's too much, and I can't take it. It's too much.
It is too much. I agree 100% that it is too much.
Well, what are you talking about?
I have no idea. I am backing you up. That's what a friend does and a podcast partner.
You're a good friend. Yeah, it's good. It's all these years, you just blindly dive in.
Just blindly.
I
support Gary. What does he believe? I don't know.
It does not matter.
But I support Gary.
I appreciate it. No, it's too much. Okay, this week, the biggest news in the world isn't public impeachment hearings or brush fires in Australia. The biggest news of the week for anyone, especially those of us with children, is that Disney Plus launched this past week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And
that's the big news.
I am assuming that this is a must-have in the Hughes household.
Oh, well, with three daughters pretty much. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep. I bought a year in advance. I know people that bought 3 years in advance. You know, it's like you can buy it for $60 for a whole year or whatever. It's not a Disney Plus commercial, but the point is this. We were very excited about Disney Plus, and this comes out, and it's almost like what happens to the dog when he catches the car. That's Disney Plus. It's like, what do I do now that everything I want to watch is right there all the time? You know what you do, Boo-ray? You sit there just like you did with Netflix, and you just flip through the titles thinking, I have no idea what I'm going to watch.
Okay, so what all is there for you? I mean, The Mandalorian, right?
And oh, yeah.
I guess maybe totally. If you wanted to watch some Avengers or Marvel films, but I've seen all the Marvel films. So other than The Mandalorian, isn't it just Lion King and Mulan? And
well, no, but there's the content on there is good for all of us. But I just want to point out how little that I actually am in control of the television at my house.
I know that well.
But the idea is that all of these people can now, like, it's going to save us a crap ton of movie because we have, like, at least one night a week, we pop popcorn, we have movie night with the girls, we all snuggle on the couch, and we usually rent something, or we buy something on, iTunes or whatever, or pay, like, $6 to rent something, like, one movie. And now we pay for it all because it's like, hey, you know what? My kids haven't seen Little Mermaid 2 or whatever. Let's go watch that. There's always something on there that they can watch. But now there's just, is there... I have HBO.
Right.
I have Netflix.
Right.
I have DC Universe. We have Hulu, and we have Disney Plus. And is there too much? Is there too much content like right now? Because now I've gotten to the point in my digital life where there's more content than I have time. I could begin now until the day I die watching all the content I want to watch and probably not get to it all.
Yes. Yes, I don't have everything you have. Because I have Hulu with live TV. Do you have the live TV Hulu?
No, huh?
Okay, I have Hulu with live TV. So I also have, you know, network shows that the Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and The Good Doctor and, you know, shows like this that I want to watch. I have HBO and I have Amazon Prime and Netflix. And I can't...
Oh, I forgot that. I have Amazon Prime as well.
Yeah, and I can't, because Marvelous Miss Maisel is about to come out. The next season of The Crown just dropped. Like today or something, I think. Then there's also a new series with what's her face playing a queen. You know who I'm talking about. She always plays a queen. Who is she?
Helen Mirren.
Thank probably. You. Helen Mirren is playing another queen. I am a sucker. I am a sucker for any movie, any show where Helen Mirren plays a queen. I'm all in. I love anytime she plays a queen.
I'll watch anything Helen Mirren does, as a matter of fact.
And then, meanwhile, over on Hulu, the regular shows are stacking up. We're like four shows behind on The Good Doc. I only watch like one regular TV show, and I can't even keep up with that anymore.
Yeah, I can get in maybe one, two episodes in an evening before I pass out. Like, that's pretty much it.
I haven't watched all of Schitt's Creek yet. I have not caught up on The Good Place. I have not caught up on Letterkenny. And then there's a new show on HBO which stars a woman who I think is really, really funny. She was in Step Brothers. And what's her name? Catherine something or whatever. Anyway, there's just every time you're like, okay, I've got to catch up on these shows. And then guess what? Here's a new series for you. Here's 12 episodes. Bang, boom. You also have, Watchmen. Haven't watched Watchmen.
Dude, new episodes every Sunday. Where you at, bro?
Yeah, right?
It's great.
Like, It's too much. It's too much. That's why I haven't gotten Disney yet, is because, I still got to get, and then there's CBS, of course. Got to sign up for CBS
because
I got to watch.
Picard's coming out. Yep.
Two seasons of Star Trek Discovery plus Picard. Plus, I understand that The Good Fight is quite a good show as well. We enjoyed The Good Wife. So it's just, there's just too much. I don't understand how they are making enough money.
Here's the thing. You know, it's Disney, I think they estimated that they would get 10 million users within the first 6 months, I think, of launching Disney Plus. And what's funny is that they had 10 million users on the first day.
I understand how they make money. Like, I understand how Disney makes money on this, because a lot of their content is just recycled old content. What I don't understand is how the companies that are producing, like HBO, which is producing tons of new content, for a smaller set of eyes, because everybody's stretched so thin trying to watch everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's like when somebody recommends you a podcast and you're like, I can't.
Yes,
like,
no, yeah, I can't. So no, yeah. I can't. I am podcast quoted. I'm sorry.
Like, that's basically like the equivalent of saying, like, I'm sorry, I have a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Somebody, oh, no, I'm sorry, I have no room in my life for a new podcast. Yeah. I mean, that sounds great and I'm glad you like it. But if, like, one of the hosts of the podcast I like dies or something, then I'll see if I can fit you in.
Yeah, and what's amazing to me is that it took so long, because cable has been around for a long time. And yet, for years and years and years, despite having 150 channels, there still wasn't really that much that was really good to watch. And then suddenly, like, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, this explosion happened where you started seeing these networks you never heard of, like, you know, AMC producing shows Mad Men.
Walking Dead?
Yeah, exactly. And suddenly all of these also-ran networks started coming out with this great content. I wonder what the shift was. I wonder what it was that made somebody go, you know what? If we produce this, we can actually get eyeballs.
Well, I think one of the things that HBO showed all the other television networks, and it really started to me, boutique television started with HBO, because they crafted the perfect mix of low-budget TV show, and they would pay no-name actors and great writers.
Right.
And writers are cheaper than actors. So they would basically get these great no-name actors and they'd make them famous. Like, think about the entire cast of Game of Thrones minus Sean Bean or Lena Headey or Sopranos. Who knew James Gandolfini before Sopranos?
Right.
You know? So, you know, I think that, but they were the ones that said, hey, you can make great television without having a huge budget. Because if you look at something like The Sopranos, which was one of the most popular TV shows in the world at the time, most of it took place in like Tony's suburban. Or in his living room. And it's like, they didn't have to build fantastical sets or costume people in like direwolves or anything like that. Right. You know, and it's like, it's so all these shows, you get shows on like, you know, USA had Suits, which was a wildly popular show and incredibly inexpensive to make compared to a lot of other TV shows. So these networks go, yeah, we can make great television. We just find good actors who nobody knows who the heck they are. And maybe like one rando that you recognize, like, somebody who was famous in the early 90s, like Tiffany Amber Thiessen, we'll just throw her in there for nostalgia's sake, so you recognize at least one face, you know? And it's, so now we're just faced with this thing. It's like, what do I do tonight? You know what I did? Literally, like, last night I was laying in bed, and I was sitting on my iPad. I go, oh, I'm going to watch something. Maybe I'll fall asleep watching something. And all I did was I just scrolled through all the titles and added a bunch of stuff to my watch list.
Yeah, that's like...
And then I went to sleep.
Yeah, and that's another thing, is the anxiety of... Oh, they've added something new. I haven't been to Prime in a while, and they've added some things to Prime. I need to go over to Prime and add them to my watch list before they are so deep into the popcorn bucket that I can't find them anymore.
Exactly. FOMO, baby. You got streaming FOMO.
FOMO?
Fear of missing out, man.
Fear of missing out. Thank you.
Streaming FOMO.
Yeah, so it's not so much. It's like the old thing that if you have the TV guide, you don't have to watch TV. You can just read the TV guide and it will tell you everything that's on TV. And it's the same thing. I'm sure The Crown is very good. I've read the little synopsis on it, and you know, and that's it. What are we watching? That we're watching Modern Love. Modern Love on Prime, which is
it's supposed to be great. I hear it's wonderful.
It's all right. Bobby was disappointed because there's not nearly enough love. It's like Modern Love, and at the end of this story, everybody breaks up. Well, Bobby likes everything tied up in a nice bow and happy ending, and that's how she can go to sleep.
So, have you got her the Hallmark streaming service? Because that's a new one. No. I keep hearing about.
No, I haven't gotten that yet.
Basically, it's like all the Hallmark movies in one streaming service, and now you can get that. I think I actually talked to a friend today who suspended their Netflix account to get the Hallmark streaming service.
Every Hallmark movie is the same.
Yeah. Except every once in a while, one of them has like Mariah Carey in it or something.
Yeah, like all Hallmark movies are boy meets girl, girl meets boy, boy, girl end up together, and it's Christmas time. That's pretty much every Hallmark movie.
You missed the part in the middle where there's some mild tension before they
just
get
some
together.
Mild tension. Yes, not like a big deal. Just like mild.
Like finds out that she survived cancer 6 years ago, yes. But yet she's still really insecure about, you know, her place in the world. And yes. Then he goes, nah, that doesn't matter. Right. And then they fall in love.
My dad's a butcher and you're a vegetarian. That's the big conflict that has to be gotten over in Hallmark.
Bum, bum.
They need to do that with the Lifetime movies too, you know, because every Lifetime movie is always, don't open that door. The Betty Watson story, you know, he has to go. The Catherine, you know, Smith story. It's every single one. It's somebody's story, and something horrible is happening to you.
Where Dean Cain's a serial killer,
yes.
Or an abusive.
It's always
husband.
A horrible story, and it's always the such and such story.
Yeah, who are the? Yeah, it's always somebody who's like mildly famous on a popular TV show in the 90s, but played a supporting role. Like, who's the guy who played Al Bundy's neighbor?
Now here's something,
Treat Wilson or somebody.
Now here's something. Here's something though that I think is funny. You said that because the person I think of when you say that, you know, mildly famous show, and it would be Judith Light, who was on Who's the Boss?
Yes.
And she did a bunch of
Angela
Lifetime movies and stuff like that. But here's what's funny. I was listening to a podcast that featured her the other day, and she is actually an extremely accomplished 2 Tony Award winning Broadway actor.
Right.
Despite the fact that she makes these little movies on Lifetime and stuff that we see in the Broadway world, she is extremely respected. Like,
well, I think Broadway is super hard work, you know,
yeah.
To like keep that schedule and to do those live performances. I imagine that doing a Lifetime movie is pretty much like taking a vacation.
Yeah,
for
I would think
Light.
So too. It's an excuse to go out to the coast.
She's like, wait, we get to do this. I can read this line as many times as I want and you just pick the best one.
I don't know how people do Broadway shows.
No.
Six days a week.
I know how they do it. With pizzazz, Bure.
With pizzazz.
Yeah.
With jazz hands.
With gumption. With chutzpah. Gumption.
Okay.
Moxie.
All right. We have quite a bit of photography news this week.
Right. But before we do that, and I have a couple of stories, I just want to talk about something. I want to talk to you about something.
All right. All right.
This is an age-old problem that we as creatives deal with, as creative professionals, is the old dangling the carrot to get you to do something for free. The old do it for exposure or do something for free for me on the promise of getting more work later. And so I got contacted through Instagram to our company Instagram account by a unnamed influencer, and in quotes I say influencer. This is a person who she puts on women's retreats all over the world. They're basically like these mastermind groups. So she gets local entrepreneurs to pay money and come and do like a mastermind group. And I checked out her Instagram, and she's like doing London and Rio and all these different, she's traveling all over the world, and there's photos of rooms full of women that are all paying to come see her. And so she asked if I was willing to come and photograph this event for a day, like a 6-hour shoot,
mm-hmm.
for no money, because she was going to expose me to all these local businesswomen that I could then work with. And that would be our deal. On a Saturday, by the way. Gary, don't do Saturdays.
Yeah.
So I would have to give up a day off with my family to go, and maybe it's like, and so initially I said, hey, no, thanks. You know, we don't really trade. I said event and branding photography, that's kind of our thing. So that's what we do for a living. So we don't really give that away. That's our premium service. We charge for that, but sounds like a cool event. Best of luck to you. And then she comes back and she goes, well, you could set up and then you could do branding portraits there. And anybody wanted to buy them, they could buy. Basically, she's just trying to find other ways to get me to come and do this for free, basically going shooting on spec. It's like I'm 11 years in with my studio, 13 years in the business. I'm not going to go shoot on spec. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do it. But I was polite. I was kind of said, hey, you know, good luck. It's not a good fit for us. Hasta la vista. It's just then she started to speak in language like, well, our photographers normally do this and our photographers do that. And my thought was, I could tell just by the language that she uses, not only the proposition toward me, but the language that she was using, that she has no respect for the people that work for her that do what we do. She doesn't respect the photography as a profession. She just expects people to just come and give it to her. And they're her photographers. Like, she creates ownership. Not, we work with some great photographers or photographers that we've worked with in the past. She's like, well, our photographers, like, I'm not signing up to your stupid club. You know, I don't want to be one of your photographers. Like, I was just, the whole thing was icky and it got me thinking. I want to ask you about it. So here's the question I wanted to ask you. Have you ever done something for someone like this where they promised on the promise of more work down the line, where you went and did it for free, where that work down the line actually materialized?
No.
No.
I knew the question halfway in. I knew where this was going, and no. It's not going to materialize. It never does. And here's the thing. If it does materialize, if by chance you go and you work the thing for spec, and then somebody comes to you and says, oh, I know you did this thing and blah, 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 they're going to expect you to do this for them, the same thing that you did for the other woman.
More than likely, yeah.
You know, if you say, I'm washing this guy's car for free. Great. Can you come wash my car? Yeah, it's $100. No. I want the same deal you gave that guy. I want the free car wash.
If you give a mouse a cookie.
Exactly. Yes, if you give a mouse a cookie.
Exactly. Well, here's the thing that I want to just point out. Not only, and this, I feel kind of convicted about this too, because I want to look around in my life and see areas where, are there areas where I'm treating other business people, entrepreneurs, and creative professionals the same way? And so I've seen professional organizations try and do the same stuff that are supposed to be protecting creatives. And, you know, it sounds like we're beating a dead horse after a while, but here's the thing. It's like, if you want to go and do something for free, go and do something for free. But here's the thing. My general rule is, if I want to give something, if I want to volunteer and do a job for free, it's going to be something that I seek out and I choose. If somebody comes to me and asks me to do something for free, immediately I know that this person is no longer my client, that this person is not somebody that I'm going to have a business relationship with. If someone comes to me and they present and they say, hey, maybe they're like, oh, but we're a nonprofit, we have a fairly limited budget, but here's what we can do. If I choose to do that, they've offered to pay me. If someone offers me to pay me for my services and then I choose to do it because I think it would be a good opportunity, that's on me. If I seek out other businesses and other opportunities to offer them something that I want to, that's fine. But anyone who comes to me and asks me to do something for free with the promise of something else down the road is immediately just going to get a no. I don't care who it is.
Right.
Like, it's never materialized. And the one time, and somebody's out there going, oh, but I did this and this happened. Yeah, that's fine. But it is a rarity when that happens.
To be clear, there are times when this works and it's on spec. But those times are, you know, for example, I work with Rob Mormon every year, when the organization that is the largest organization for homeschooling in the country says, we're going to have 600 homeschoolers at the Gaylord in Atlanta, and they're going to have a graduation ceremony. And would you please come and give us some event photography for a day or two? And in return, we're going to let you do senior cap and gown pictures for all 600 of these seniors and set up a booth and sell them in the lobby.
That's part of a package deal for
me. That's spec. Sure. And he, you know, and but you make money off of that. That's a good money making deal. But that's not the case when it's come please take event pictures at our conference.
School and sports photography is largely spec anyway. That's the business model. Like, there's no guarantee you're going to go out and try and sell packages to people. That's a business model that you chose, and a very, very, very profitable one at that.
Sure.
But and if I'm going to work with a company and as part of the deal, they're going to pay me to do a thing, and then I'm going to just do this for them as part of the deal to close the deal, I do that all the time.
Sure, absolutely. And I'll do, and you want me to come do dance pictures at your dance school, and you want me to kick back 15% to you? Sure, because you are bringing me the customers. I am making money, and I'm going to pay you a commission just like I would a salesman who brought me business. But you're not bringing me any customers when I come and photograph your sales conference or whatever.
Yeah.
What gets me is the person who calls you and says, I'm going to expose you to all these business people, and will you come do this for free? And the question you want to ask them is, when's the last time you, Miss Business Person, when's the last time you paid for photography? Because if you're not paying for photography, why is anyone who's coming to your conference going to pay for photography?
Correct.
So, you know, you're trying to create a market that doesn't exist. Because if the market existed, people would be beating down your door to come work your conference. You wouldn't have to go seek out a photographer. And I'm with you on the our photographers. Our photographers? Great. You know what? Why don't you call up one of those photographers who's done... So many of these photographers have had such a great working opportunity working for you and have made so much money on the back end. Why don't you have one of them doing it? Why are you contacting me? And furthermore, why are you continuing to talk to me? If this is such a good opportunity, why do you have to keep coming back to me with explanations as to why I should do this? You shouldn't have to explain. You know, I don't have to keep calling you going, no, there's going to be 8,000 gallons of free ice cream here and you should come have it. I don't have to keep explaining to you if it's the free ice cream conference why you should work the free ice cream conference.
Right, yeah.
I only have to tell you it's a free ice cream conference and you go, ooh, I can't wait to get in there.
The offer on the face of it should be enough for me to be able to figure out whether I want to do it or not.
Yes. If you have to keep explaining it to me, then clearly it's not the bargain you think it is.
And she also indicated that this was not the first time they've done this in Orlando. Well, and so contact one of your photographers. Yes. Who did you use last time?
Yep. I'm sure that person would love to do this job for you again since they made so many contacts last time and so much money off the gig.
I guess maybe she's just used to contacting people and them just going, oh my God, are you... Yes. Oh, oh, that sounds like an amazing... You know what sounds like an amazing opportunity? The opportunity to have no appointments on a Saturday and to hang out with my family and try and catch up on some of this streaming that I can't get my head around.
Yeah, I did it like once maybe... once or twice when I was first starting out, and that was enough. And I realized, oh no, photographers are invisible. We're invisible. Like, you know, you're just trying to get something for free. And let me tell you, it also goes to the influence culture. I'm so sick. The influence culture is everyone thinks that, you know, that they deserve a piece because I have people who follow me, and I'm guilty of that too. You know, I get annoyed when I want to talk to a camera brand or something about something and they don't pay me any attention. I'm like, don't you know who I am? I'm Boo Ray Perry.
And, the Boo Ray Perry.
So I get that too, but I also understand that they get diluted with that stuff all the time. And so do we.
Yeah, I mean, but okay, here's a good example of when I do something like that. We work with our Chamber of Commerce a lot in our area.
I was going to ask you. You've gone and done Chamber of Commerce stuff, headshots for free, but that's different.
Here's what I do with the Chamber of Commerce. This is my deal with our Chamber. First of all, I sought them out. I joined. I paid my membership dues, and I joined. Then I went to an event, and like a let's meet everybody luncheon, and I brought my camera. I snapped a few photos with my camera, just casually, my little Canon M5, and then I sent the images over to them. I said, here, I took these at the event. Hopefully you can use them. And I did that of my own accord. I chose to. And then immediately they were like, thank you so much. And we began a relationship. And they immediately hired me to do some photos. And then I offered to do their staff photos. They got a staff of about 12 or 13 people to do headshots for their staff. And then I said, I want access to, let's do a deal. If you need my services as event photography, I'll donate X amount of hours a year to the chamber. And you get to pick where you put those hours. And in return, you allow me to do this, this, and this, and this at other events when I want to come and set up a headshot station or do whatever and meet people. It's like, you get me into there. And I've created this relationship where they refer me to companies all the time. And I get work from them and I do stuff for them. We've created a really good symbiotic relationship because we have a very similar clientele and we're really good natural partners and they pull their weight just like I do. And I picked them on purpose because of that. Right. So I looked at the roster. They have a banging website. They do 120 events a year. They have a decent sized enough staff to where the pictures would have value to them if I did them. And not only that, but they have like 4,000 members and only two of them were photographers. One's a baby photographer. One's a wedding photographer. They don't have anybody who does what I do in their group.
Right.
And so I'm in. Like they needed me. And I jumped in and I pursued them and then it worked out. But they didn't come to me and ask me to do free stuff, you know? And if they had, I would have said no and I'd have probably signed up with a different group.
Well, everybody wants photography free.
Yeah, they do. That's the thing is though, there are clients that value it and that understand that it's worth paying for. And those are the ones that you need to cultivate and don't waste your time. I know that as creatives, especially if we're solopreneurs and we're like, it's a little slow sometimes and you're like, oh God, this would be a good opportunity. No, create your own opportunities to work on spec. Don't work on spec at the behest of somebody else. Come up with your own ideas and pursue your own ends and you'll be much happier. And if those don't work out, at least you didn't get cheated. You thought of it. You went and did it. It was your idea. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I like that you used solopreneur and behest in the same like little segment there.
We got to have a little like supercut of the words I say that you make fun of.
I just feel you're raising the bar that you would use solopreneur, a word I've never even heard before, but I understand exactly what it means, which are the best words, right? A word that you've never heard before, but you
understand exactly
what it means, solopreneur. And then behest. I like behest. We should have more words like behest.
Behest.
I'm not making fun of you at all. I'm saying seriously, at the behest.
I test high on vocabulary.
All right, it's time for photography news.
Photography news. What do you got?
Well, there was a rumor, and then it was quashed. There was a rumor this week that Olympus was going to be shutting down their imaging division.
Ooh, I was reading about this, yeah.
Olympus cameras were going to go away, and then Olympus quickly came out and said, no, we are not going to do that. That is a rumor, and that is not true. But here's what's interesting about the denial. They said that Olympus imaging products play an important role as technology drivers for all Olympus business lines, including the advanced digital technologies used in medical, industrial, and scientific business. See, that does not give me great reassurance that you're going to be making wonderful cameras.
No, at all.
It's just saying when you say imaging division, our X-ray machine is also part of our imaging
division.
Our
photocopiers, yeah, our graphic calculators.
I'm still not convinced that this is really a sign that, whoa, and as a matter of fact, we're working on some fantastic Micro Four Thirds camera that's going to blow the market away. You know, it's sad because when I was coming up, me and all my friends were in the camera club at school and we were shooting pictures for the yearbook and no two of us had the same brand. My buddy Scotty shot Olympus. I shot Pentax. My buddy Jeff shot Canon. You know what I mean? But now that just doesn't really happen much anymore.
Well, you got now the big three. So obviously, it's like Canon, right. Sony, Nikon for you know.
Most but it used to be. It used to be Canon, Nikon, Minolta, Pentax, Olympus.
Does Minolta still
Leica? Minolta, is Minolta even around anymore?
Not in a way that's significant. If it doesn't pop to mind for us,
What was it? The mind of Minolta. That was their big slogan. So, and listen, if their cameras went away, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I know a few people that are diehard, and honestly, I've gotten my hands on a couple of these over the years. My sister's always, she's a hobby shooter, and she's great. Had a great one of those Minolta pens or the Olympus Minolta, one of the Olympus pens. And they're brilliant little cameras, well-featured and light and take great photos. But, you know, it's just, again, that's another story I was reading this week about the overall, every single major camera maker sales are down anywhere from 18 to 27%, depending on the division, depending on the company. Like, parts of Nikon are down nearly 30%, you know, and it's just overall the demand for cameras is lower, and naturally sort of economic Darwinism, some of these companies are just going to stop making cameras because there's just not enough people buying them. You know, that's just how it's going to go.
In other news related to that closely, I read a article the other day that had finished compiling numbers for 2018. So this is not this year, this would be 2018, which had reported on the worst jobs that you could have.
Hold on. Wait for it.
Yes.
Wait.
And
wait. Hot tar roofer in Florida in the summer.
That's not a good job. No.
That's a bad job.
Not a good job. But the career of photographer is listed as number 25 among CareerCast ranking of 2018's worst careers.
Really?
Yes.
Well.
Yes. It was beat out by military personnel, newspaper reporter, and, wait for it, disc jockey.
Yay!
Yes. Disc jockey. Being a disc jockey. Being a disc jockey is worse than being a photographer. So I climbed up a little bit when I quit being a disc jockey to become a photographer, but I'm still inside the 25 mark of worst careers that you can have.
So what's below that? Like, could we go, you know, go down a couple rungs?
I don't have the whole list in front of me. I couldn't find the whole list.
But I guess it can be. And you know what? Honestly, it's hard to dispute that because many, I can't tell you how many photographers I know that are struggling in the industry, people who desperately just want to do something that they enjoy for their job, they want to create for a living, and just can't sort of get traction with their business, people that are struggling. I can say that. I don't know a whole lot of attorneys in that situation where they're like,
no,
yeah, I got this law degree from Harvard, and you know, just having a real hard time finding work, you know? And there aren't a lot of heart surgeons out there just going, yeah, you know, Johns Hopkins, man, those guys are really full of it. I thought I'd be employable after I graduated in the top of my class, but here I am just working at Chick-fil-A. No big deal, you know? No, photographers are a lower paid, underemployed group of people. That's right. I mean, I do know photographers that are killing it, absolutely, but the only ones I know that are killing it are the ones who've made the decision that it's a business and not an art. And in which case, that's gonna take the joy out of it for a lot of people.
Here's the thing that I've noticed that I'm seeing it in all aspects. You're seeing it here in this story. You're seeing it at the PPA. Next week, I will be in Atlanta for the nomination committee meeting, where me and my fellow members will decide who will be nominated for the board of directors. And in the questions that we ask, and we get video depositions from people as well, one of the things we ask is what are the struggles that are facing modern photography and modern photographers and the organization PPA as a whole. And everyone has an opinion on it, but those opinions all come back to the changing face of photography today. And also, what makes you a photographer? And I think that you're going to see a lot of brands, you know, the PPA maybe being one of them. I don't know. I'm not in a position to make those decisions. But you're going to see a lot of brands start to branch out more, and there's going to start to be a blur between the professional photographer and the hobbyist. That whereas there've always been people who love photography, and then there would be these organizations or these groups that were specifically for the guys who own the brick and mortars.
Right.
These were, you know what I mean? You're going to start to see a blurring. You're going to start to see that the idea of professional photography might become, it's not so much about whether or not you're making a living at it. It's more about an attitude, or more about, I don't know. I mean, What do you have to be a professional photographer?
Interesting. No. I was talking with somebody about this the other day, is that there are probably more Insta spouses out there than there are professional photographers. So people right. who are in this, because I actually know someone who has a large social media following, whose husband and partner has basically become a really, really great photographer, having to take pictures for her and her lifestyle brand. So they bought like a Sony camera, and you know, the guy takes great, great photos, and he's as much of a talented, you know, photographer as many of the so-called professional photographers I know. But if you asked him if he thought he was a professional photographer, he'd say no.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have a group on Facebook, right? Pro Photo Talk with Boo Ray Perry. Pro Photo Talk with Boo Ray Perry. And yet I promote that in my YouTube videos, which are directed at mostly amateurs who own the Fuji X100F, and they come and join my group now, and I welcome them, because I realize that if you are only trying to apply to people and talk to people about photography who are full-time professional photographers,
that's a
you
small
are really
ass group of people
playing in a small pond.
Yeah,
right. And it's the same way with this podcast. We that you have to realize that. If you're still out there and you're on a horse about what professional photography is, your horse is in trouble.
Yeah, you're on the wrong horse.
Because there was a time when there were professional photographers, and there were some photography enthusiasts, you know, in the days of film, people who were just an enthusiast and they bought cameras with film and they liked to take a lot of pictures. But the people who had most of the gear, they were the people who were pros, because it was expensive, you know, to be a photographer.
Big investment.
But that's flipped now. Now there's 10 times as many people who just like taking pictures and do it all the time.
Right.
And so I don't know. I feel like the shift has been coming, but I feel it's going to start to become more official, that you're going to start to see more. I mean, what you see in the websites that we go to look for information on photography news, there's stories about the new Olympus camera, and then the next story is about how Instagram is not going to show likes anymore.
Yeah, the
which has nothing to do with being a professional photographer, and everything to do with people who just like to take pictures.
The interesting part about professional photography is it's being absorbed into other industries that need imagery in order to promote themselves. So I was just photographing for this company the other day. They're a promotional products company. So they make, you know, quarter zips and thumb drives and coffee mugs with your company's logo on it. They have a huge staff of like 40 people. And they're a local business, and they just a huge warehouse, and they just have stuff to photograph all the time. So they basically got one woman in their office who they are now giving her a credit card to kit herself out with photography gear. And she's been doing this for about a year now, and she's doing really good product photos. And she's got like a Sony A7R and lights and all the stuff. And she's setting up with mannequins and doing product photography. And if you asked her, she goes, no, I'm in marketing.
Right. She would never say, I'm a professional photographer.
But she does perfectly competent professional level photography for their business every single day. And Bobby, for your wife, does photos all the time. Photography is an enormous percentage of her time in her business.
Yes.
But she wouldn't ever consider herself a professional photographer.
No, no, no. And she is.
Yeah.
In a totally different way than I am, but she absolutely is.
So those of us who are used to the more traditional definition of the professional photography industry are going to either age out of the industry bitterly, or you're going to have to open the door and let some more people in, because that's what photography is now. Photography is an essential part of marketing that isn't necessarily the purview of someone who's dedicated specifically to do photography anymore. And that's just the way that the world is.
What do you think the definition of professional photographer will become?
I don't know. I don't even know if it, you know, I have my own thoughts as to whether or not it's going to be a standalone industry in the way that we see it now anymore. You know, changes in technology, automation, AI, and, you know, people, it's going to be, photography is going to be a part of many jobs. I wouldn't be surprised if you start looking at jobs for big companies that'd be like, hey, experience in photography is a bonus for this job in the marketing department or this job in the warehouse or wherever, you know, like they're probably going to have that as a very valuable skill for some that you can get hired with. And so, you know, I don't know, but I think that it's important to keep your eyes open, and it's easy to go rabble, rabble, rabble and resist and stand on your little hill and you know, die there, which you will die there if you don't look around, because changes are constant and inescapable in the industry. And you have to be aware, or else you could lose your shirt easily.
I tend to give classes when I teach at PPA, and like this year when I'm teaching at Imaging USA, a lot of times I get people in my classes who are really just starting off trying to be because my classes are not, here's the 12 light picture of a model that I took at the Grand Canyon, I'm going to show you how to do it. Yeah, that's a class for someone like, you know, me or Gary. My classes are more, you know, here's how you use one light and take a good picture of a bride or a senior. The basic stuff that you need to start you on this journey to becoming whatever it is you want to become. And I would like it if we began to see this open up to more people who I don't want to be a professional wedding photographer, but I do want to be able to take better pictures, and I'm prepared to buy an off-camera light and a softbox and learn a little bit more about 2-1 ratio and proper posing and stuff, so that I can take better. I would like to see more people like that.
Yeah, I think that we call it in nerd culture, it's called gatekeeping. You're familiar with the concept of gatekeeping? It's basically like, you know, if I was a Star Wars fan as a kid, when I was a kid, it wasn't a particularly popular thing. Late 80s, early 90s, people were burnt out on it because it was the most popular thing in the world. And for about a decade, nobody gave a crap about it. And then all of a sudden, started making movies again, and now it's the most popular Halloween costume and all this stuff. And now Disney has it, and they're making all these movies. And the people who grew up, like, we weren't allowed to think it was cool, but we loved it in secret as kids. And we're all like, I've loved it since I was a kid. And same thing with comic books and superhero movies, the most popular media in the world. And feeling like we own it, feeling like that we are the ambassadors of what is and isn't considered acceptable in that thing, that gatekeeping
mentality. The way I feel about Game of Thrones, because I read the books twice before the show came out.
Right, exactly. So like gatekeeping. And so gatekeeping is great if you want to feel angry, and you feel good about your knowledge, but you're angry about the way the world's going with a piece of intellectual property that you love, or an industry that you love. And the gatekeeping is great, but except for the fact that it doesn't hurt anyone else, it only hurts you. Gatekeeping is, you're the only one being damaged by that type of behavior. And professional photographers, we're really bad about gatekeeping when it comes to everything related to this industry that we love. If you didn't invent the camera, if your name isn't Mr. Eastman or Mr. Kodak or something, like, you don't get to say how things go in the industry. You're just one of the many moving parts inside of it, and you will get crushed by the steamroll of this whole other world of photography and spit out the other end if you're not more open to the idea of your business might have to change. I can absolutely see professional photographers starting to get more involved in producing commercial videos and getting more as marketing agencies than even photography studios. Like, that would be something that a lot of us might have to do to survive. It would be a natural fit for me if a company could come to me and I have a designer on staff who can do a website and who can create marketing materials that can end photography just being one aspect of something that we do to help clients in their businesses. That's an evolution that I can see happening more and more because it already exists. And so you have to realize photography can change. And if you are just being a gatekeep the entire industry, you might just gatekeep your way out of a job.
That being said, if you are a person who is new to photography, I'm gonna play devil's advocate now. What can be annoying is when you're a person who's new to photography and you seek out professional photographers to ask them questions that a simple Google search would have easily answered for you.
That's also true. Yeah.
Okay.
What's an aperture?
So when you, because you were saying you've got to welcome people, you've got to welcome. Yes, I do welcome you, but I mean, we don't want to be gatekeepers, but at the same time, you know, no shirt, no shoes, no service.
I expect you to be at least putting a little effort in.
Yes, you've got to put a little effort in to look decent if you want to come into our restaurant. And then we'll let you in no matter who you are, and we'll let you ask questions about the food. But if you just come in and go, you know, I don't know nothing about food, and I'm drunk and my shirt's off, and I'm coming in, and you know, what's asparagus? Then no, I don't have time for you.
That and- might be the worst analogy in the history of this show.
That is, well, like, I am speaking with the master. I'm speaking with the master there. So yeah, is, I'm going to fail on that front.
Oof. That, oh, man. You
What's
may have,
asparagus?
Not only was that bad, that was a black hole analogy. Your bad analogy just sucked all the good analogies out of my brain.
I
That's,
love that one.
The force of the gravity of that poor analogy just sucked every good analogy I've ever thought of right out of my brain.
The name of the episode is going to be What's Asparagus? I'm calling that right now.
Because normally, in fact, I've actually gone back and looked at this, and most of the episode titles are something that I say.
Yes.
Because I do all the editing, and it's just what I think of, like, whatever stood out to me, and it's normally something I say. So I'll let you have this one. We can call it What's Asparagus.
Oh, well, thank you so much for that.
So in other photography news, I want to talk to you about this. I think this is, if you peruse the article while I talk about it, this is about the B&H accused of avoiding over $7 million in taxes on instant rebates. Now, this is the sort of arcane minutia that your brain gets really turned on by. So
okay.
The specifics of the law here are what's in question. So essentially what happens is...
I don't think there's any specifics at all that are in question. It's very cut and dry.
It is and it isn't. So here, just let me lay this out. If you're not familiar with the story, so essentially what's happened is a New York attorney general has filed a lawsuit against B&H for allegedly dodging their millions of dollars in taxes over the last 13 years. Because essentially what happens is when you go and you buy something on B&H and it has a rebate, it says like, oh, you get a $300 rebate. So you pay $300 less for the item. So B&H, for example, would charge you sales tax on the reduced cost of that item. And then the retailer would reimburse them for the rebate. So B&H still gets the money for that rebate. But they don't pay the taxes on the additional $300. So essentially, right. what they've been doing is not paying the taxes on the rebate amount that they don't charge it to you, and then therefore they don't pay it. Now, some retailers will, not a lot, they will charge you sales tax on the reduced amount, and then they will just eat the sales tax on the other end. That happens. But essentially what they've been doing is just not paying it. Now, apparently, according to them, the argument that B&H has is essentially the same argument that, like, any five-year-old would have. It's like, but they did it too! Like, they're just saying that everybody does it. And not everybody does it, but apparently it's a pretty common practice to do this exact thing. And so their argument is, this is just a shakedown. This New York State attorney is trying to make a name for himself. He's trying to go after a local New York institution that employs hundreds and hundreds of people and that, you know, stimulates the New York economy with all this money. And it's just a power play by the state attorney. And the state attorney's like, yeah, but you still didn't pay your taxes.
You didn't pay your taxes.
So
I'm sorry.
Your thoughts?
No. The bottom line is, you know, you receive. How much did you receive for this? Well, the customer gave me $700, and then Canon gave me $300. So you received $1,000. You owe sales tax on $1,000. No. We only owe sales tax on the $700 the customer gave us. No, because Canon gave you $300. You have to pay sales tax on anything that you sell.
Correct.
Now,
Well, we're talking $67 million in sales over 13
I would have made the argument that, I don't know what is in there, but I would have made the argument that I didn't deliver any goods to Canon when they gave me the $300. And therefore, I don't pay sales tax on it because I didn't deliver any physical goods to Canon in return for the $300. That's the argument that I would probably try and make.
Mm. Well, I don't know. This is going to get legal down to specific New York state tax law, I'm sure, in the county of New York, in the state of New York, and is filed, I believe, with the state Supreme Court. And so, I mean, this is a pretty severe thing that, I mean, they're going to be liable for $7 million in taxes in addition to penalties.
And $7 million in taxes, not liable for taxes on $7 million in sales.
Correct. We're talking $67 million in rebates that they did not pay taxes on.
Ouch. Yeah, well, because it's the same. I mean, here's the thing. That's one thing. Either you're going to pay sales tax, or even if you weren't paying sales tax on it, then at the very least, you have to reduce the amount of money that you are taking credit for on your taxes. So if I pay $500 for the camera and I sell it for $1,000, and then you, Canon, kick me back $300, well, then I only pay $200 for the camera. So now I don't get to write off $500 as my purchase price on the camera. I only get to write off the $200 because I didn't spend $500. I only spent $2.
Right.
Right? And I would think that that would be even worse because the amount of tax that they are paying as a business on their whole profit is probably a higher percentage than the sales tax is.
Yeah. Well, you know, the argument too, again, by the attorneys and the people that represent B&H is that this is a widespread industry practice and you have huge international retailers that are much, much larger companies like Amazon, et cetera, that are doing the same thing. And why is this guy picking on a New York business? He's bullying us and blah, 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 blah. So what essentially has happened is B&H got pulled over for speeding.
Yes.
By a state trooper. And then B&H is going, but the guy in the Lamborghini was driving so much faster than me. And the cop goes, right. Yeah, but I pulled you over.
Like, you're still speeding.
Yeah, you're still speeding. Sorry. Like, yeah, I mean, so it's not exactly it doesn't sound like a super valid legal argument to be able to go, what's more than likely to happen is I predict that they will either come to some kind of settlement where they will pay kind of reduced. But the thing is, this will set a precedent to be able to go after these larger retailers. Because if the state of New York decides to go after Amazon, Amazon has more money than the state of New York. Amazon probably has better lawyers than the state of New York. And so if they can go after B&H and set a legal precedent for this, it could also mean millions and millions of additional revenue for the state of New York and other states that decide to do the same thing. And so basically I'd say, well, fellas, it was good while it lasted. Everybody knows you were getting away not paying your taxes just because nobody was enforcing it and now somebody is. That's just sort of my general initial take on it. Not my final word exactly, but
I think that, okay, so maybe you don't charge sales tax on the full amount because you only received $700 when you sold it in the state of New York. That's fine. As long as you are also not claiming the full purchase price on that item as far as what you bought. You can't claim that either. Here's what I want to know. At the end of the year, did all of the rebates that they received, did those rebates get rolled into their bottom line as profit that they paid income tax on?
I don't know.
Okay. Because if they did, then, well, even you still have to pay sales tax on it. Sorry. There's an argument to be made that because they didn't sell anything to Canon, they don't pay sales tax to Canon.
Yeah, so it's not like a physical product that Canon didn't get the physical product.
What Canon did was reduce the cost of the product.
Right.
And therefore, they don't now get to claim that entire cost of the product on their taxes as an expense. So if that's the case, that's the argument I would make.
It's going to be an interesting legal battle for sure. And as it develops, I mean, these things can take a long time. But as it develops, I'm sure we're going to keep up with it and talk about it more on the show. I got one more story I wanted to cover. And by the way, if you have any thoughts on that, if you happen to be an accountant, or a tax attorney, and you know these sort of things and you want to weigh in, hit us up on the Facebook page, facebook.com/photobombpodcast, and let us know. That story is already posted on the Facebook page. You can comment right on it and let us know. We would love for someone who knows what the heck they're talking about to weigh in on this issue. Finally, this wonderful story that we covered in the past. Do you remember the story we covered about the guy who got arrested photographing somebody being worked on by paramedics?
And, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about this guy in Dallas. And so basically this happened in a while back in February of 2016. And we talked about this photographer, Avi Adelman, who was arrested while trying to photograph someone who was apparently having an overdose. And so there were police and EMTs were working on the guy. And this was on the property of the DART, the Dallas Area Rapid Transit Authority. And essentially a cop said, hey, stop taking pictures, yada, yada, yada. And he's like, I have a right to be here. I'm a photojournalist, etc. Guy got arrested, spent the night in jail, turns around, files a lawsuit. And so this week, he was awarded $345,000 settlement by from the Dallas Area Rapid Transit Authority system or whatever for that. And so we did talk about this as to sort of, I just don't know. The guy doesn't work for any like news outlet or whatever, but he does make his living, I guess, as a photojournalist. And
it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
It's public property. It's public property, and you have no expectation of a right to privacy.
Right.
I mean, here's what I don't get. So you're going to tell me that I can't take pictures here on this public property? It's in plain view, and you have no right expectation of privacy. That's what you're telling me. Yes. And I am staring into a camera that you have strapped to your chest that is videotaping me right now without any permission from me. Yes. The reason they were able to see everything that happened here was that the cops were strapped with cameras. The cops are recording everything the cops say to me, everything they do, everything that happens, the cops are recording that. But I can't take a picture?
That's a valid point.
I don't understand. Why are you allowed to take pictures of me and I'm not allowed to take pictures of you?
Well,
And this wouldn't have been a problem in the past, because in the past, if you were there with a camera, you were a photojournalist. The cops knew you. You had a hat on with a big press tag in the band, like Clark Kent. And so you were a journalist, and they knew the journalists, and they knew that they couldn't mess with the journalists because the journalists could screw them over in the paper and blah, 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 blah. But nowadays, that's all blurred away. Nowadays, everybody's got a camera and a video camera in their pocket, and everybody's taping, and you just get used to it. Everyone's recording you all the time. Just accept it.
That's a little creepy.
It's true. It's true. I am I the only one who sees the irony of a person who is recording you without your permission telling you that you're not allowed to record them without permission?
No, I agree with you. I just, you know, my initial feeling was that it's just sort of like, I don't know, it seems my emotional reaction, not my logical reaction, is that this guy's just kind of icky. You know, like, what is he getting out of that? Like, is anybody going to buy those pictures from him, or is he just doing this for fun? Like, I don't know. I get that too.
I thought the same thing, but the law protects the icky as well as the just.
You're not right. Justice under the law is what we're talking about. But, you know, here's the thing, though. If the guy comes out with a book, let's say, next year, and he's been doing these types of things, let's say, for a decade, and he comes out with a book of these amazing, like, images of courage, and it's just basically first responders saving people's lives, and he published a book out of it, he'd be like, he'd be on Fox News as an American hero or whatever. You know, they'd be interviewing him on every news network on, you know. So, like, it's all context, I guess.
But then again, he could also come out with a book of people in really embarrassing situations. Here's Janie throwing up in the street after, you know, a bender on the town. Guess what? You don't have a right to privacy throwing up on the street, Jamie.
Walk of shame, Jamie.
Yeah, it's just, it sucks. It does suck. But it's one of those things we have to allow in order to have the freedoms that we have of the press and expression in America.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, you got to take the good with the bad.
So just a little feedback from last week from a couple listeners. We talked about vanity plates. Do you remember our vanity plate conversation?
Yes.
Well, a power listener, Kenji Horvath, has just... He posted a picture in the comments of the episode, and he said, I used to own an Audi TT. I eventually had to sell it, but I kept the plates and put it on a 1998 Volvo S70. I loved all the thumbs up I got driving around in my Volvo. And the picture, the vanity plate says, ILOVTTS. Okay. I love TTS.
Okay.
So unless they're on a TTS, those could definitely mean something else.
Yeah.
So
yes, it could.
Also, I would be okay with that as a vanity plate. I would think that that's... How'd that one get by the DMV, you know? I wondered. Because don't they screen vanity plates for, like...
They do. They do. And there have been, you know, stories of people who have had their place rejected after years where it was, like, their name, but it could also be construed to be something else.
Yeah.
And they were like, you know, like Schitt's Creek. My name is John Schitt, S-C-H-I-T-T, and my plate is Schitt One.
No, shit's two.
Yeah, two cars. I have two cars. Shit one, shit two.
Yeah, the only one that makes sense. Number two, please. So we talked a little bit about the frustration with having to fill out medical paperwork. Ann writes in, I've actually been to a couple of doctor's offices recently that asked me if I would like to use a tablet to do the intake, quote, paperwork. It was certainly easier than pages of paperwork. And the title of last week's episode was Mine Goes to 11. That was a rare something Blu-ray said, by the way. And yes. Chris Hetherington commented, best title ever. So I guess you win.
Well, I win last week.
You win last week. And probably this week, too, because what's asparagus?
What is asparagus? Okay, so I do have another, before we wrap it up, because this is like in the news this week, and I just did one quick mention, because I know we posted this on the Facebook page as well, and if you haven't seen this story, it's definitely worth looking at, and it's the awesomeness, the total awesomeness of photographer David Burnett bringing a 4x5 camera called the Aero Liberator to the impeachment hearings to take pictures of the people who were testifying. The video of all of these people... And the picture of all these people with all of these cameras and all these video cameras. And then here he is with this giant, giant Rubik's Cube of a camera. It's made out of wood. And he's taking pictures with this camera. I just made my heart sing when I saw it. I'm just,
it's the photo that you posted in your group from the news story. Is he's just surrounded by like younger people photographing with big digital cameras. And then he's just got this like.
Giant, giant, made out of wood, ladies and gentlemen, film camera that he's taking pictures. And which, of course, immediately made me go to his page and look at the stuff that he's done with his camera. And I love it when people do this. I love it when they're like, you know what, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to rock this thing and make us, I like this. And so I'm going to do it. And I love that he got press credentials and was able to get in. Because, you know, how many people want press credentials to go into the dang hearing? You know, I mean, he's not a nobody, you know, you got to be somebody to get credentials to go in there. And despite that, he's still going to take this camera. And they said the shooting speed is like 1 every 5.5 seconds. That's the shutter speed.
You really got to pick your shot, man.
Really got to pick your shot. So I just I really thought that was a great article that he took this big old camera in there. And very briefly, I mentioned this a second ago, but yes, Instagram is rolling out in a test market the idea that other people cannot see your likes on Instagram.
Thank God. Now nobody knows what a failure I am at social media.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's a great idea because Instagram needs to go back to being a place where you post pictures not because you want people to like them, but because you like them.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a good thing. And they've been this has been going on for a couple of years that they've been testing this in different markets. It's getting a much larger rollout. I think that they're just saying it's like on a let's see how it goes basis.
Right.
You know, but I'm for it. Yeah. Everybody who doesn't get a billion likes on everything is very much for this. So pretty much everybody is behind this.
Yes. Everyone but the influencers.
Yes. Everyone except the influencers who want us to shoot for free.
Okay. So I guess we're wrapping this up.
Yes. Yes. I wanted to point out, too, that I just did a we were talking about making stuff for people that are fairly new in photography. I just did a live webinar called the One Light Headshot, and this is a live shooting webinar that I did. It's got really cool picture-in-picture desktop capture. You can see what I'm doing. It's about 40 minutes long, and it's absolutely free, and I'm going to post a link to that in the episode description. So scroll down, and you'll be able to click and watch that immediately. I will make that available for you guys, anybody to watch that who wants it. So check that out. And we are going to be in some interesting places coming up soon, aren't we?
Yes, we will be in Nashville, Tennessee in January. For Imaging USA, go to imagingusa.org, and you can get all the details on us being there. And then we will be in Las Vegas for WPPI.
Yes, we certainly will, and we're going to be doing many fun things. Definitely not drinking, definitely not gambling, and definitely not going to the void to be the Ghostbusters.
Yes, absolutely not going to be doing that.
Nope,
all right,
no way.
So please come see us at those two places. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/photobombpodcast. You can find our website, photobombpodcast.com. Gary is at hughesfioretti.com.
Yep.
I'm at BlueRayPerry.com, and you can email us questions@photobombpodcast.com. We'll see you back here next week.
See you later.